the last Secretary General said, Hassan Nasrallah speaking.
Politicians, parliamentarians, some officials, yes, they are known. However, those in particular, those who work in jihad, it is very natural, the nature of the situation, the nature of the challenges don't allow us to uncover their identities. And so they are unknown. They were not known before they were martyred. Now, once they are martyred, people then view their pictures, they get to know their names, and they might sometimes be surprised when it comes to the status of this martyr or that martyr and the role he played in this resistance. However, also after their martyrdom, we can also not say everything. We cannot make them well known to people, except in brief. The reason behind this is that their lives, the lives of these martyrs, and the achievements which they made, and the details of what they did, the details of their personalities, is blended in, is diluted in this resistance, blended in with this resistance and this march. Meaning, irrespective of resistance, apart from the resistance, they didn't have any life whatsoever. These types of colleagues, these kinds of people, those who have fallen as martyrs and those who remain alive until now, those people devoted their youth to this resistance. And so maybe most of them, not all of them probably, but maybe most of them don't have a social life as people know social life, as common social life is known to people, because their days and nights, their efforts were all focused on serving this cause and serving this resistance. And so when you speak about these martyrs after their martyrdom, we can speak about their achievements. We can't, however, speak about the achievements because we're still in the middle of the battle. If we are still right in the middle of the battle, I cannot say what Haj Hassan Laqis did during his lifetime, what achievements he made, what he used to do, what was his main duty, what was his main job, what are the successes which he achieved, because all of this is related to the resistance movement. And this is the reality of the situation. However, and this is also part of the sacrifices made by the families of the martyrs. The families of the martyrs lose one of their beloved when this beloved is martyred, and they also don't have the opportunity, there is no opportunity to get people acquainted, for people to get to know the greatness of this martyr. After he is martyred, there is no opportunity to speak about him to the people. This is the fate, because via martyrdom, we request victory for our ummah and for our resistance. And this is just one of the sacrifices which we must all be patient towards. We hope that the day will come whereby we can speak openly about the achievements of these martyrs, in particular the commanders, the leaders, their successes, their personalities, what made them unique. And we hope that we could also be fair with them in this lifetime, although this life will end, and with God will be the biggest reward. They will be rewarded, of course, by God, these martyrs. And this is something which reassures the families, that their achievements will remain and will be taken into account and will be developed, and all the efforts and every teardrop, every drop of blood, and every all pains, all efforts which they pursued in the resistance, all of this will have a positive impact by those who live now, those who fulfill the pledge, those who stand solidly and stand firmly on the path of resistance. This will make these martyrs still alive in our march, whether it be what they symbolize or the achievements which they made. Now, with respect to what we can say about our commander, our leader, Haj Hassan Laqis, what we know and what our colleagues know, those who worked with him and those who were close to him, what they know is that this mujahid, he has sacrificed. He is a mujahid with the full meaning of the word. He devoted his youth to the resistance ever since the very beginning, ever since the founding of the resistance. And he pursued serious efforts and continued pursuing efforts, and he loved martyrdom. He was a very lovable person, a person who you like to be in the company of, and was also very talented and able to make big achievements, one of the most talented minds in this resistance. The enemy, always throughout the last few years, the enemy always spoke about the war of brains or the war of minds between Israel and the resistance. Hajj Hassan al-Laqis is one of those minds. He's one of those minds. And he is one of those bright minds, actually. And he was a leader who assumed responsibility. He worked day and night. In the war, he was on the battlefront, and he was right on the front lines. And during times of peace, he was preoccupied with the issue of getting prepared and readiness and further developing, because the confrontation with the enemy has not ended yet. The battle hasn't ended. For me personally, as many people know, he was like a brother to me. He was one of my friends. He was very close to me ever since we were young, ever since we were young in the eastern city of Baalbek. Now, anyway, he was a student of such a school, and he always strived in order to achieve this great honor, and he achieved it in the end. He achieved it. He achieved it, whether it comes to the timing of the martyrdom or the manner in which he was martyred. Of course, this is between Ashura and Arba'in of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein. Now, with regards to the assassination operation, all the evidence which we have gathered shows and proves that proves our first accusation, which is accusing the Israeli enemy. If we add to it the attempts, the previous assassination attempts, because Hajj Hassan was subject to more than one failed assassination attempt, and the enemy also spoke about these failed assassination attempts. If we also notice, brothers and sisters, the way in which the media dealt with this matter, over a period of days, the Israeli television, the Israeli newspapers, the Israeli analysts, I followed and I monitored the Israeli media. I monitored what they said about Hajj Hassan and what they said about the assassination operation. I can tell you that they touched upon officially taking responsibility for this assassination. Anyway, the investigation will continue. But the conclusion we have reached after gathering the evidence show that this is the first accusation which should be made. This is not a political accusation, but it is based on evidence. Now, everything which was said after the martyrdom of Hajj Hassan, for example, anyone can write what he wants on Twitter. Anyone can, for example, upload anything on social media and declare responsibility. Part of what was said is empty talk, and another part of what was said was for the sake of sectarian incitement, especially when they speak about or they refer to the term Sunnis in the assassination operation. And another attempt or another goal was misleading. The Israelis might pursue such a policy to draw attention away from Israel, to take attention away from Israel being a suspect. All of this which was said from our perspective is meaningless. Our enemy is well known, our rival is well known, and you know that we don't speak indirectly in such issues. We don't want to say Israel is behind everything, nor is it not behind everything. When Israel isn't behind a certain issue, we say it isn't. We say it's the other country. However, when Israel is the one and when evidence points to Israel, we then accuse Israel. Number four, we, after this martyrdom, we are expressing the situation which we have been witnessing for many years. I call it paying the price. Paying the price. And our brothers and sisters and the supporters of resistance, all of us must realize that we have been witnessing such a situation for many years, and the situation will remain as such until we end this battle, until this battle is decided. This means, first of all, that we are paying the price for our previous victories against the Israeli enemy. This resistance brought about historic victories. It achieved a historic victory in 2000 and it forced the enemy to withdraw preconditionally. The enemy was defeated and humiliated back then. Now, there are many people in the world who want this to be forgotten. They don't want this issue to be mentioned. They want it to become part of the forgotten past. However, we must always repeat this issue. We must always remind people about this, because it is a result of huge sacrifices and blood, a lot of blood which was spilt. It's a result of the pains of the families of the martyrs and the wounded as well, and those who are still suffering, the detainees in the prisons, whether they be Lebanese or Palestinian or Syrian, who participated in bringing about the victory which we achieved in 2000. This victory, which changed a lot of calculations in the region, and it opened the doors of hope. It also launched the Intifada in occupied Palestine. It did a lot of It led to a lot of events. Then we had the 2006 victory, which overthrew the project of the neoconservatives in the Middle East, which was the Greater Middle East, not just in Lebanon or South Lebanon, but in the whole region. Can anyone imagine for these big powers, for their projects and for their schemes and for their plots, and for them to be defeated, humiliatingly defeated, in a humiliated way? And can they expect them then to clap for us, to applaud us for thwarting their plans? Or will they try and take revenge? And will they try and make us pay a very, very high price because we had the courage to stand against them, and because we had the will to resist them, and because we remained in the resistance and in the battlefield until the last breath, and because we fought them and made fighting them the priority of our lives and achieved victory against them in this priority? So it's natural, as a result, it's natural that they want to come and kill us. It's natural they want to come and assassinate us and hunt us down, seek revenge against us. And so we, first of all, we are paying the price of the victories of the resistance. We are not alleging this victory is for ourselves. We are saying that we participated in this victory, but we were an effective, a very important, essential part of this victory, and we appreciate and respect, and we recognize the efforts which were made by all other resistance fighters from other parties. And second of all, we are paying the price of our permanent and ongoing commitment towards the cause of resistance and our staying in the status of resistance, remaining a resistance force, and our continued efforts to be prepared in a way which deters the enemy. People are preoccupied. Everyone has his own priority, has his own business. However, I mentioned this before, in Hezbollah, there are many, many of our brothers, many of the intellectuals, many of the leaders, many of the youth, even many of our brothers and sisters as well. Many of those people who are working in Hezbollah have nothing to do with what is going on here or there. Their main concern is how can this resistance be in its best possible shape to confront the enemy when the day comes whereby the confrontation will be imposed on Lebanon and the war will be imposed on Lebanon and the region by the enemy. This is what preoccupies them day and night. They study, they plan, they discuss, they work, they pursue their efforts, and they continue. One of those people was Hash Hassan Laqis. And one of the very high members of this group was Haj Imad Bughniyya. Others you don't know. God knows them. Now the enemy knows all this. Maybe some people don't know. Some people in Lebanon think that Hezbollah is sitting day and night just focusing on March 14. I'd like to tell you something. A very high percentage of Hezbollah, the last thing on its mind is March 14. Because it's about priorities. It's not because we take a certain group lightly. It's about our priorities. A very high number of the members of Hezbollah, their last concern is March 14. Their main concern and their only concern is the enemy, confronting this enemy, defending the enemy, the dignity of this country, defending this country against this enemy and defending the resources of this country and defending our people in this country against the enemy. Now, this is something which we must also pay the price for. The assassination of Haj Hassan is part of seeking revenge because of the victories we achieved before, and it's also part of the plot to strike at the main players who play a role in the readiness of the resistance and the capabilities of resistance to further develop itself. And in this perspective as well, we witnessed the martyrdom of the commander Haj Imad Bughniyya. We witnessed the martyrdom of other leaders, Ghalib Awali, for example, Ali Saleh, the martyr Abu Hassan Deeb, those who were assassinated previously before. He who believes that those martyrs were killed on the sidelines of the battle or outside the framework of the battle, and those who are killed in the battle are the ones only killed in direct warfare. No, even those people were also killed right in the indirect warfare, because war continues, but in different forms. So those martyrs as well were killed in the battle which is being waged between us and the enemy. When we speak about paying the prices, this is just one of the prices which we pay. We pay the price of our leaders, in our blood, in our souls. There are other prices which we also pay. Of course, because when we speak about the victories and the previous defeats, and when we also speak about the strength and the capability and the readiness of the resistance, this poses a problem to the superpowers, to Israel, and to governments in the region, and also with people who for tens of years have spoken about defeat, and those who tens of years have spoken about the weakening of resistance and sold out Palestine and the Church of Sanctity in Palestine. But what happened actually overthrew what they said, contradicted what they said, and opened a new horizon. Anyway, paying a price is not only paying a price in our martyrs and paying a price in our blood. We also pay the price when it comes to the status of the resistance, its sanctity amongst the people, the confidence of the people in this resistance, the morale of its supporters and its mujahideen via this very brutal media war. This media war whereby billions of dollars are being spent. I'm not exaggerating. Just a few years ago, if we can remember, Feltman said that we paid, this is a few years ago, it was back then, he said we paid $500 million to tarnish the image of Hezbollah and for the Lebanese youth not to join Hezbollah or to respect Hezbollah. What is the money which is being spent on the media outlets who every single day broadcast all of these rumors and lies and accusations and spread these rumors and accusations and this misleading approach in order to have an impact on our people and our morale. Part of it is about Syria. For example, when someone comes every day, if my dear brothers, if every day we have 200 or 300 martyrs from Hezbollah falling in Syria, how many members do we have in Hezbollah? If that was the case, wouldn't we have run out of fighters? Some Arab media outlets and foreign media outlets continue with this, lying 24 hours a day. Now they say it in the news, but then they repeat it again, but also at the bottom of the screen they continue with it as well. It continues hour by hour, every day 50 martyrs, 70 martyrs, 200 martyrs, 500 martyrs. Over the past 3 weeks alone, when we saw the confrontation in Eastern Ghouta, and this was a big conspiracy which actually failed, some media outlets, Lebanese media outlets, they put it in their news, and they said, they also wrote articles, they said that the martyrs from Hezbollah reached 500 and they're approaching 1,000 only in Eastern Ghouta, as if we're playing marbles. 500 martyrs in a period of 2 weeks, and it's quickly heading towards 1,000 martyrs. You cannot imagine, my dear brothers and sisters, that these people don't know they lie. Don't imagine they don't know they lie. They do know that they lie, and they lie deliberately. However, this is part of the psychological warfare which they have been assigned to. When we tell the Hezbollah supporters and the Lebanese people and those who love the resistance, look, over the past 2 or 3 days, 500 martyrs from Hezbollah has fallen in Eastern Ghouta. Of course, when people hear such rumors, they believe it. They feel pain and sorrow. So their aim is to impact us, to impact our morale. They want to tell us that you're paying a dear price, a high price, and you must reconsider your stance. However, they know that they are lying. This country, Lebanon, we are a village. Lebanon is a village which is open. Everyone knows everyone. If someone is killed or is kidnapped or is absent from his home, does this remain unknown to the people and to the media? What kind of a party can hide thousands of martyrs from their families and from their villages and from their communities? This is the example. Anyway, this blind war which you are witnessing now and in the past, it has nothing to do with the disagreement over the government. It has nothing to do with the disagreement about Lebanese politics, in order for you not to be mistaken. It has nothing to do with agreeing to a prime minister or disagreeing with regards to a prime minister, or agreeing to an electoral law or disagreeing to such an electoral law. No, this is from the outside. But the issue is much deeper. The fundamental issue is related to the resistance and its will and the project of resistance and overthrowing the resistance, morally, culturally, psychologically, amongst its people, amongst its supporters. They have been waging this battle for years, and you know anyway, you know that some of these people, some of those who belong to this anti-Hezbollah camp in Lebanon and in the Arab world, were against the resistance ever since the beginning. This is nothing new. However, in different stages, they were looking for different means, different justifications in order to launch their campaign and attack against the resistance, because during some periods of time, they cannot attack the resistance as a resistance, and so they resort to other means to launch this to launch such campaigns. So we believe that we are paying this price, and we believe that this price is part of the battle. We understand this. We consider it part of the battle. And just the same, in this confrontation, in this battle, we believe in the military operations enduring wars like 2006 or the war Grapes of Wrath in 1996, and also settling scores in July 1993, martyrs will fall on the way. At the time when we prepare, martyrs will fall. At the time when we walk on this path, martyrs will fall. And at the time whereby we train and hold drills, also martyrs will fall. So sometimes when martyrs fall during training or drills, we should not say, we don't have to say this in public, we say it to their families. However, in this issue, we cannot change anything. We cannot change one letter of reality of what really happened when it comes to dealing with the families of the martyrs. But in the media, we don't have to express details. We don't have to speak about details. We say that they were martyred during the time that they were performing their jihadi duty. Sometimes they speak about people being martyred in a car accident in Kalamon, here or there, but from our perspective, this path which we are walking on is still the path of resistance, because it is the path of resistance, a path of martyrdom. It is the resistance in the battlefield. This resistance is a resistance which sacrifices martyrs and which is always ready to sacrifice martyrs for the sake of achieving these great and noble goals. And so we put up with these prices, we pay these high prices, we show perseverance towards them, we are proud of them, and we consider them as sacrifices, and we give them to God. And these are the feelings which you can see. This is what you can see. You visit the families of the martyrs, whether it be those who were killed during the confrontation with Israel, or those who were martyred or killed during the confrontation against the terrorist groups in Syria, or those who were killed and martyred as a result of the car bombs in Lebanon. Go and visit their families, and the only thing you will hear is one word, Allahumma taqabbal minna, which means, God, accept from us this martyr. Isn't this the logic of the martyrs? But all those who have this approach, all those who speak about tension amongst the supporters of the resistance, all those who speak about doubt which they are trying to create, all those people who speak about anger amongst the families of the martyrs, these are their lies. These are their illusions. These are their wishes. They never saw anything to prove these accusations. In the end, I will conclude with Syria. However, I'd like to tell you right now, when they speak about these high numbers of martyrs, what is the number of fighters, if you want to speak about this number of martyrs? However, in the end, those who are trying to express doubt when it comes to the determination and the commitment of the supporters of resistance and the families of the resistance fighters and the men and members of resistance, I'd like to tell them, up until this moment, we are still participating in a very limited manner. And we haven't reached the stage whereby I was forced to hold an internal meeting, or whereby one of my colleagues was forced to hold a meeting to encourage the Mujahideen to go ahead and join the battle. And we haven't reached the stage whereby I had to go out and make a speech in order to encourage people to join jihad. I haven't reached such a stage as of yet. And I'd like to tell you, according to the information we have when it comes to the battlefield and the transformations in the region, political and international changes taking place, it seems that we won't need such a speech to happen anyway. It seems we won't need such a speech. We won't need such steps to be taken in the future. Number five in the first part of my speech, the fifth point in the first part of my speech is the assassination of Hash Hassan al-Laqis. This is not something, a normal incident between us and the Israelis. Let nobody think in such a way, whether it be friends or enemies. Don't imagine that it's just an incident which can pass by and it's ended, and we have held the funeral. No, we have an open account with the Israelis, and this account is still open. It's an old account and a new account, and there are accounts which are renewed. If the Israelis imagine, or if they believe, when it comes to the timing, if they believe that they carried out this operation at a time whereby they believe that Hezbollah is preoccupied and is drowned in its situation in Lebanon and in the region, which makes Hezbollah not think about Israel or not take Israel into consideration. But today I say, in this ceremony, I say, you Israelis, if you think in such a way, you're mistaken. This account has been open ever since Sheikh Raghib Sayyid Abbas to Haj Imad Mughniyya and Hassan al-Laqis. It will remain open. The killers will be punished sooner or later. And the blood of our martyrs, the young and old, this blood won't go to waste. Never did it go to waste before. Those who killed our colleagues will not be safe. Anywhere in the world, they won't be safe. And the punishment will come. The punishment will come. When we have the will, and when we have a decision, and when we have the appropriate courage, the necessary courage, the time will come, the time which we will decide. The time will come, the time which we will decide, because we, along with the families of the martyrs, we who own the blood, but we are punishing and holding accountable the real killers, not their cousins, the real killers. And I'd like to tell you that we will punish the real killers. Now, when it comes to the Lebanese issue, the Lebanese internal situation, before I conclude again with Haj Hassan, with respect to Lebanon, a few points. The first is that we notice recently, anyway, this has been going on for a long time, but in particular over the past few months, weeks and days, we have witnessed an unprecedented escalation in rhetoric from the other side meaning March 14, the March 14 Alliance. What shows this unprecedented, usually we don't refer to speeches. Usually in speeches we are all human beings. When someone is making a speech, especially if he's enthusiastic, he is impacted by the crowd in front of him, by the venue maybe, and maybe he might be taken away by the feelings and show a lot of enthusiasm during the speech. This is something which we can understand to some extent. However, when we have a written text which is being read, and not just written typed, a text which is typed and people are gathered, and it agrees to such a text, this means no. There is something which we must address. There is a situation which needs to be addressed. What happened during the declaration of Tripoli just a few days ago by the March 14 Alliance, there is something very dangerous in this declaration, something very dangerous which was said, and in my view is unprecedented and is something new. I don't know how much it was focused on during the series of events. So I'd like to say a few words and I'll make a comment and then I'll explain why it's dangerous and we must focus on it. When they speak about the takfiris and the extremists and from all different sides, we reject this, we reject that, then they say we also reject the extremism of some of the Shia who come from Tehran via the policy of Wilayat al-Faqih, which transcends political borders. This policy which eliminated and led to explosions and killed and also considered others to be infidels. I don't want to discuss the essence, is this true or is it not, but the accusation. Now, who do they mean by this? They mean us, of course, by such words. The first name is clear. It's us. They mean us. Now, when you, in a written text, and when you have in front of you a number of your associates, your allies, and when you declare this, what are you saying? You're describing your political rival. You describe us as takfiris. And you described us as people who eliminate others. You described us as people who carry out or who lead to explosions. And you described us as killers. Now, what does this mean? What do you mean by this? There are two assumptions. The first, because this is a question which requires an answer. The first assumption is that, okay, that's it. You believe that we, not March 8 as a whole, but let's speak about Hezbollah, you believe that we, in your imagination, never can you dream of us sitting together on one table of dialogue, or that we can participate together in one government, in any framework, 996, whatever. This is one assumption, that this speech means that that's it. This means that's it, eliminating takfirism, eliminating, cancelling the other side. And so the aim of this speech is a declaration of war, to declare a war. If that's the intention, say it clearly so that we don't waste time. If this speech aims to say that's it, we won't turn back, and hence this group, this very important group in Lebanon, a sizable group in Lebanon, of course, I speak in such a way when it comes to myself, I speak with humility when it comes to myself, but when it comes to Hezbollah, no, I don't speak with such humility. But if these people are cancelled out from Lebanese calculations, and its decision, the decision of that other side is to cancel them, eliminate them, and hence a fatwa has been issued to make the spilling of their blood halal, something which is allowed because they are people who carry out explosions and takfiris. If that is the approach, let us understand. If it's a declaration of the war, tell us that. Tell us if it's a declaration of war. We don't want to make a war with you. We don't want a war with you. And we don't have time for you. And our battle is with the Israelis. But nobody should play games with us. Nobody should play games with us. What is behind this talk? We want to understand what's behind such remarks. Now, the second assumption is no. This is part of the campaign. This is part of the media furor, the psychological furor, and so we can accuse Hezbollah of being an extremist, of takfiris and being killers, so that Hezbollah will back down and be weakened and make concessions and give us what we want. Now, if that is your goal, the second assumption, then respect the minds of your supporters and respect their hearts and minds. When you, in front of your supporters, when you say that these people are killers, people who carry out explosions, they're takfiris, they say this, and then the next day you see them sitting down with these people, respect your supporters. In this perspective, even to my own political alliance, I call on all the political factions in Lebanon, whatever be the escalation in rhetoric, let the people leave some room for reconciliation, leave some room for turning back, except if you reach a stage whereby we all have become convinced that there's no longer room for any coexistence, there's no longer any room for living with each other, no longer any room for partnership, no longer any room for political, for peaceful civil coexistence, and we want in Lebanon, we want what is happening in other countries. But if we are convinced, or if there is a culture or a will, or if there is some convictions or some culture or some will that no, in Lebanon, in the end, we must be together, we must sit on the table of dialogue, we must participate in a government together and manage the country together, then let us and let them leave some room for reconciliation, for the sake of the hearts and minds and the will of the people, and for the sake also of our dignities. Because when we make these accusations against each other, when we use such dangerous terms against each other, excuse me, what then will make us sit down with each other? The second, with respect to the Lebanese army, With respect to the accusations against the Lebanese army recently, nobody should take this issue lightly. I'd like to say it very frankly, Hezbollah, the first day, the second day, the third day, we didn't issue a statement because we didn't want anyone to say that we're taking advantage of this incident. You know, the sectarian atmosphere which now exists in the country. For example, the city of Saidon, the people who fell, those who were killed. We took all of this into consideration, and we are very intent and keen on not increasing, further inflicting the fire, further deepening or expanding the wound. Wherever we can seal the wound, we want to seal it. This is our interest, all of us, not just the interest of a party or a sect, it's the interest of the country. However, from another perspective, nobody should take lightly what took place. Nobody should take the danger of what took place lightly, because ideologically, and everybody knows what I mean, ideologically, and when it comes to morally, spiritually, this is very dangerous. It's very dangerous what happened. Its significance is very dangerous. It's more dangerous than the explosion in front of the Iranian embassy or a car bomb in Biqa or Beirut or Zahir or a Hirmil being targeted in rockets, or yesterday we heard about rockets falling between Al-Qa and Ras Al-Balbak in northeastern Lebanon. But what happened in Sidon is a lot more dangerous. So for the first of all, we call on people to stop and take a look. Nobody should react angrily. Nobody should take it within the framework of political competition and rivalry. We must all stand and look. All Lebanese, all factions must take a look and say and view this incident as very dangerous. It might be the beginning of something. And second of all, we call for protecting the military institution, the Lebanese army, for a simple reason. Not because we don't care about other institutions, because as we said before, the institution, the only institution which enjoys popular support, other institutions, whether it's wrong or whether it's right, other institutions are described in sectarian terms, but the army still enjoys national support, national consensus to a very high level. In our language, I can say it is what remains of the state. It is what remains of the state. For example, God forbid, if other institutions stop working, stop functioning, and the army remains, then on this mountain, which is a Lebanese army, we can rely on this mountain to rebuild the state. However, if this mountain, if this army collapses, if it's overthrown and weakened, then nothing is left. The country will then be lost. Everybody will be in a state of loss. Everybody. So what is required is to protect the military institution and also prevent danger from reaching this institution and not expressing doubt in the army. And here I would also like to propose something to the Lebanese, make a suggestion to the political parties, to religious figures, to us and to others. I'm not saying that we previously didn't have our reservations towards the army. We did, but I suggest from now on, as a result of the danger which we are witnessing currently in Lebanon and in the region, and due to the fact that the Lebanese army is the savior and is the safety belt for this nation and for this people, let's protect this army. And even if we have reservations, if we have something to say against the army, let a delegation can go and visit the military command and say, we have these reservations, 1, 2, 3, on this checkpoint you did this, in this place you made these raids, in that place, for example, you're not inspecting. If you have any reservations, say them, but don't say them in public. Let's make such a commitment in order to preserve the dignity of this institution, to preserve the confidence of the people in the army, in order to build on it for the sake of the future. In order to build on it for the future, because we all know if the confidence in the Lebanese army collapses, if it is torn apart, if it falls, everything then that's it. Now, today, if anything happens, two families disagree, two parties disagree, if two areas disagree, if they open fire on one another, we still have one side which enjoys confidence amongst the people and can tell them, go home, stop this. Sometimes the Lebanese army is called upon to take decisive military action. In Lebanon, that's something which is not easy, but it's very good that the Lebanese army can play this role. Can play this role of being the fireman, which takes out the fires. If the fireman collapses, what is left? How can we put out the fires? Now, number three, with respect to the government, we still believe that a political consensus government must be formed, a real national unity government, and we believe that the issue of a neutral cabinet, this is a trick. In Lebanon, there is no one who is neutral, not affiliated with a certain political group. If somebody disagrees with you in politics, yes, he is a politician, he is an intellectual, he is an artist, a singer, anything, and he has respect. He has widespread respect. Maybe he doesn't share your same convictions. Politically, he might disagree with you. But when it comes to his own personal feelings, he might like you. Some people like others who disagree with them in political issues. Maybe they like them because of their personality, their behavior, their sacrifices. But we have reached the stage in this country, those who want to form a neutral government. They say, for example, if someone says, I like person X, all hell breaks loose. Nobody can like anyone in this country. Nobody can respect anyone. Nobody can be in the middle. This is the situation now in Lebanon. It's forbidden. And so they quickly describe people, they name them and they eliminate them and they tarnish your reputations. Is this the forming a neutral government? This is a trick. And we don't advise anyone to take the step of forming a de facto government. Full stop, point. The alternative of vacuum, the alternative of a power vacuum, is forming a government, a national salvation government which serves national interests, a government which includes all sides and doesn't leave anyone out. The courageous person is he in Lebanon who says that I will form a government of national unity, whether they like it or not, whoever likes it or not. He who wants to be a hero, let him be a hero against the regional countries. Tell Saudi Arabia, stop here. Tell others, stop here, stop this. If Iran wants to disrupt it, tell Iran, stop it. If Syria wants to stop it, tell Syria to stop it. In accordance with the Constitution, I believe that the way to save Lebanon now is to form a national unity government, and I will form a national unity government. This is the way you carry out your constitutional responsibility. This is courage. This is boldness. This is manhood. Not to go and run towards a neutral government or a non-allied government under any title whatsoever, under any name whatsoever. Number four, that's enough when it comes to the government. Number four, with respect to the presidential term or the presidential elections. Now, we have a very important event coming up. How important is it? On the 25th of May next year, we should have a new president. How important is this, and how will it affect the formation of the government? How will it affect the new electoral law? How will it affect the upcoming parliamentary elections? How will it affect the institutes of the state, the country, etc., etc.? This is something everybody knows. But unfortunately, instead of the political factions right now beginning with the serious efforts to elect a new president, we have begun right now to accuse one another of being behind the power vacuum. They say he is behind it. No, he's behind it. No, they're behind it. We haven't even begun. But I believe that nobody wants a vacuum in presidency, a presidential vacuum. Nobody in Lebanon wants this. Even the extremists in the March 14 Alliance don't want this. And nobody in the March 8 Alliance or nobody amongst our allies also wants a presidential vacuum. I don't believe so. Our interests lies in a president, in having a president. This is first. Second, it's natural that every political faction is striving and hopes that the president will be from his particular political group, which whereby this president will achieve his aspirations, which he believes are Lebanon's interest. This is something normal. Nobody can take this right away from anyone. It's their right to think in this way. It's our right to think in that way as well, to have a president from our respective political alliances. Number three, the Lebanese today have a historic opportunity in front of them. Today, the Lebanese have the following opportunity. Either they are completely capable, 100%, with a Lebanese internal national will, 100%, to elect their president. This opportunity exists. Or, if we don't exaggerate, of course, the Lebanese do have today freedom in decision-making inside Lebanon, which is unprecedented because of the internal and regional situation. Now, what does this mean? What's the responsibility of the political factions and leaders in Lebanon? These Lebanese factions and the Lebanese people and these political leaders, are they capable of managing the country without outside intervention, outside roles, without outside powers having a role? We always are waging battles against each other, battles of sovereignty. He says, I'm sovereign. The other says, no, I'm sovereign. Between brackets, for example, when the French ambassador in Beirut said that France, if it had the decision to make between a power vacuum and extending the presidential term, it supports extending the presidential term. At that time, nobody made any comments regarding the French ambassador. Why? They believe that France is still the mother of Lebanon, which elects and which organizes, and people just go and stand in the rows. We mustn't. Anyway. The battle of sovereignty is not about slogans. Real sovereignty in the presidential elections is that we Lebanese must elect a president without receiving any dictations from any country in the world, whether it be a friendly country or an enemy. Are we ready to do this as Lebanese? This is what is called a real test of sovereignty. If you're not ready, this means all these slogans are empty. This is a big test which we are approaching. If we can take steps, we have alliances, we have friends, we have relations, but if we are able to make our own independent decision, and if we exercise our own convictions without being subject to any pressure, without accepting any pressure, if the Lebanese political factions in Lebanon behave in such a way, this will really lay the foundations for a new political life in Lebanon. I can say that if we behave in such a manner on the 25th of May 2014, then the 25th of May 2014 will not only be a celebration day for the resistance and liberation, but also celebration for sovereignty. A day for sovereignty and independence. But what does this require? It requires us to behave in such a manner. Now, in the end, with respect to the presidential vacuum or the presidential issue, nobody wants power vacuum. Go ahead. Let anyone take the initiative. and hold contacts, and let us put together a roadmap. Let us put together a real roadmap which leads us to holding these elections. Let us not waste time and kid one another and push things forward. If we really want to hold presidential elections, do we really want to elect a president, then how can we carry this out, taking into consideration all the circumstances in the country? We in Hezbollah, we are against the power vacuum, completely against it. We believe the only alternative to such a power vacuum is electing a new president at the specified time, and we will pursue all our efforts to the maximum together with our allies to achieve this. And it's natural that the other political side, or that the political side which we belong to, it's natural that we have our candidate who is suitable, who fits in with the situation which Lebanon and the region is currently going through. Number five, with respect to the presence in Syria, I'll have a few words to say, and then I'll conclude with also remarking about the Marty Haj Hassan Laqis. Previously, we spoke about why we were in Syria, why we went in, why we left. We were the last ones to go, what the nature of the battle over there is and how the situations changed and what was the situation previously in Syria and how it evolved in Syria, until the people of the Intifada or the opposition, call them what you want, they say that it was stolen. Those people of who speak about a revolution, they say the revolution was stolen from us, meaning we must begin, go back to the beginning. When it comes to the beginning, is it wrong, right? Let's forget this. But now, at this time, what do we have in Syria? What do we have now? What is it? What is it that we have in Syria? How do you evaluate what the situation now is in Syria? Speak in a realistic way. Don't recite poetry. Don't speak about your illusions. Let's speak about the facts on the battlefield, facts on the ground. So I really hope when we discuss the issue of Syria, let's not always go back to the beginning. My dear friend, they can say, okay, it was a mistake. All right, we were mistaken. Okay, we made a mistake. But now, what's the situation now? Now you're mistaken. Okay, previously you were right, but now you're mistaken. Now I'm right and you're mistaken. Let's speak about the situation now. Who holds us accountable in this lifetime, in the aftermath? Allah will hold everyone accountable. But now, in the current circumstances now in Syria, in the current regional circumstances, now, after everything has been uncovered in Syria, now after everything which has been declared in Syria, after all the goals have been uncovered, and this doesn't require any evidence, when it comes to the performance, the behavior, the threats posed by the situation in Syria, there is something in Lebanon which is wrong when they speak about the threats represented by the minorities. No. This takfiri issue is not a threat to minorities. It's a threat to anyone but the takfiris themselves. Not those who disagree with takfiris ideologically. Maybe others could share the same ideology. They could be takfiri and qaida. However, they might belong to another organization. Don't you hear about confrontations today between the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant and al-Nusra? Both of them are takfiris, al-Qaeda affiliates, and they are loyal to one Amir, who was Ayman al-Zawahiri. They belong to the same school, they belong to the same founder, and they adopt the same rhetoric, and they also propose the same goals. Maybe al-Nusra yesterday, they addressed, or they made amendments to their language, but this is related to Geneva too anyway. Don't you hear, aren't you seeing what they're doing to each other, how they kill each other, these two groups? How they spill the blood of each other, how they steal the property of each other and the money of one another. I'm not speaking here about minorities, no. And I'm not speaking about the what remains or the other Sunnis who are the real backbone of this ummah. I'm speaking about those who belong to one ideology and one Amir and one school and one cause, according to their rhetoric, and one project and one goal. This is what they're doing. Does this require evidence? It doesn't require evidence. They upload these images on the internet. There's no need. Did you go and see them? No, I didn't see them. But I can see them on television. So do we need more evidence than that? Anyway, in light of what the information, in light of what is going on now, what is taking place in Syria poses a threat to the Syrian people and to the majority of the people in Syria. They say you're killing the people and you're waging war on people. Who's killing the people? And pose a threat to Lebanon, and they pose a threat to the region and to the Palestinian cause, and they also pose a threat to the Sunnis, just as they pose a threat to the other sects and minorities and other religious groups. It's just the same. Look at Adra, what happened in Adra. In the media, we heard that they killed Alawites and Christians, but they also killed Sunnis. Now, what's happening in Syria? Is it sectarian cleansing or killing? No. The highest number, highest percentage of the Syrian army who is participating in the fight and being killed and being beheaded, and his chests are cut open, the higher percentage of those Syrian soldiers are from the Sunni sect. So it's not an issue of sectarianism. The situation is that we have a takfiri ideology which targets everyone but itself. Nobody should be mistaken in this issue. And so this is a clear explanation. This took place, so I actually... What I want to say in the end is that this issue, our presence in Syria, irrespective of the scope of our presence and the exaggerations of our presence, I explained this in a previous interview, but now it has become the main media and political topic in Syria, irrespective of the scope of our presence and the exaggerations of our presence. I explained this in a previous interview, but... Now it has become the main media and political topic which aims to make us go against one another, to incite against us. What is going on now? They say that what is going on now in Lebanon is a result of our presence in Syria. Everything happening now in Lebanon, they say the reason behind it is our presence in Syria. Why isn't there a government? They say because Hezbollah is in Syria. Why didn't we put together a new electoral law? They say because Hezbollah is in Syria. Why do we have this economic situation? Because Hezbollah is in Syria. Why the tunnel leading to the airport has been drowned with water and rain? Because Hezbollah is in Syria. Why do we have a problem here or there? This is illogical. And what proves this is that before Hezbollah went to Syria, let's be logic, before Hezbollah, take away the reason, what was behind it? Before Hezbollah went to Syria, did we have a government? Did we have a political law, electoral law? Did we hold parliamentary elections? Did we have a good security situation? Did we have a good coexistence? Did we have a civil dialogue? Weren't there any killings? Weren't there any takfiris? Weren't there any car bombs? Wasn't there any killing and targeting of the Lebanese army? No. Was Lebanon in its best shape before Hezbollah went to Syria? And after Hezbollah went to Syria, then everything happened and now. But this is wrong. This is wrong. Now, if Hezbollah returns to Lebanon, everything will be solved. Who said so? Who said so? It's not true. It's very clear that the aim of this pressure, this ongoing pressure, is to find or to bring about a situation in Hezbollah. I'd like to tell you, you're wasting time. You're wasting time. You're wasting money. You're also making your supporters excited for nothing. You're exhausting your souls for nothing. You won't achieve anything. We, in the resistance, when we were in resistance, three quarters of the world was cursing us. They were saying we were terrorists, a terrorist organization, blacklisted. We were wars were being waged against us. If anyone contacted us, they were thrown in prison. But this didn't change our convictions, all of this. And today, I'd like to tell them, whatever you say, whatever pressures you exert, whatever you do, this won't have any achievement, this won't achieve anything, because from our perspective, the battle for Syria is a battle of existence, not a battle of privileges. It is about our existence. It is not the battle of our existence. It is not the battle of the existence of Hezbollah. It's a battle of existence for Palestine and for the Palestinian cause and for all the resistance project in the region. And so this will not be shaken. Because, for example, there are some people who day and night are speaking out against Hezbollah and making these accusations against Hezbollah. Now, I always tell our colleagues, I always tell some of my colleagues, why do you always listen? If somebody, for example, has a duty to pursue, to listen to curses day and night, no. So you don't have to listen. I tell my colleagues sometimes, don't listen. Don't listen to what they say. This won't achieve anything. Our decision has been made. Our decision is final and decisive. And nothing will impact it. For example, the other day they tried to speak about 1,000 martyrs because I said there is no such number. Nobody in Hezbollah should provide evidence to anyone. Whoever wants can go and count, but we don't have to count the number of martyrs. Now, Hezbollah is saying we don't have this number, but we want to prove that we have this number of martyrs, and they begin with a campaign of 1,000 martyrs. They broadcast images of people who are alive. There were some who were martyred during the Battle of Israel, and they put their images. They named some. Now, some people say now the campaign has stopped because they can't find the 1,000 people. But look, this is very insulting. Very insulting. If you disagree with someone, okay. You say something, you attack him, he attacks you, you curse him, maybe he curses you. But when you speak about the families, isn't this this is how we are in the East, isn't that so? The Arabs are as such, Muslims and Christians. When you harm the family, when you insult our family, then that's it. Martyrs are our families, okay? Our martyrs are our families. He who insults them is insulting our family. Nobody should play this game. Put this issue aside, our martyrs. You are here and we are there. You have tongues to speak and we have tongues to speak, but don't speak about the martyrs. They have their dignity and their respect. What is strange is that they request from us to respect their martyrs, but they're not ready to respect our martyrs, nor to respect the feelings of the families of our martyrs. Anyway, this cannot have any impact whatsoever, and there is also something which I want to address, although I don't consider it to be very serious, but if anyone is thinking, I heard a few days ago one of the parliamentarians of March 14 saying, let Hezbollah withdraw from Syria and let it form the government which it wants. I saw the title, I didn't read the text actually. If there are other conditions in the text, I don't know, but the title drew my attention. Are you so concerned with our presence in Syria? Okay, my dear friend, if we have 200, 500, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 being killed, why are you upset? Are you really feeling sorrow for us? Let me speak simply. Are you really feeling sorrow for us? Or are you making fun of us? Are you happy when you speak about 200, 500, quickly approaching 1,000? These numbers you broadcast on your TV stations, is this a way to play around with us, or is it because you feel sorrow? If you aim to insult us, there's no need. Anyway, they say that Hezbollah is withdrawing. Let Hezbollah withdraw from Syria, then it can form the government at once. You're mistaken. For our issue, the situation in Syria isn't about a government in Lebanon or power in Lebanon or privileges in Lebanon. It's deeper. It's more important. It's more dangerous, the situation in Syria. This game of power, I'd like to remind the higher symbols, the bigger symbols, the others might not know. In 2005, all power was proposed to us. A proposal was made to us to have all power as a bargain for the resistance, because when we have a big cause, power is a detail. Never did we strive for power or authority. This doesn't mean anything to us. So when there is a battle of existence and the fate of a ummah and a region and sanctities, nobody should play with us this game of children, which is ministers and power and parliament. The issue of our presence in Syria is strategic. It's a big strategic issue. It has nothing to do with internal enmities. For example, I'm fighting with Syria so that you don't defeat me in Lebanon. No, I'm fighting in Syria because we have the fate of Syria, Lebanon. To discuss this on the table of national dialogue, the initiative launched by Parliament Speaker Biri, we agreed to discuss it on the table of national dialogue. Let's come together and evaluate what is going on in Syria. What's the appropriate, what's the correct stance to take? So I really want to please put this aside. You have a lot of other issues you can talk about. You have the arms of a resistance, which you always speak about, but this approach won't lead you anywhere. This is the general atmosphere in the region, this incitement, this unprecedented tense rhetoric. It's very unfortunate, I'd like to tell you now, on the screen, from behind the screens to all the Lebanese, I want to express some anxiety here. It seems that in some place, not in the world, but in the region, in one place in the region, in one place in the region, there is someone who has reached the stage as a result of his anger, and as a result of his hatred, as a result of his failure, as a result of the road being blocked in front of him, he has reached the stage whereby he wants to drag the country to an explosion. It's unfortunate that I told the Lebanese this, but we must be cautious. For this reason, I said stop and take a look when it comes to the attack on the Lebanese army. Let's pay attention. I hope there is nothing new in the region whereby people are blinded. Previously, maybe they had a view and they hoped that they might achieve victory in Lebanon, in Syria. So put Lebanon aside, put the Lebanese army aside. If you want to launch attacks on Hezbollah, on Hezbollah's environment or Hezbollah's supporters. But the concern, or the fear, is that there is someone, I'll tell you the first letter of his name, that there is someone who, that's it, he's lost it. There's no more horizon, no more success, no possibility for victory, no more hope. Of course, hope for them. No more hope. So they drag the situation to chaos in Lebanon, all-out chaos. All the other countries are witnessing chaos, so there's no problem for them to have chaos in Lebanon. Those who are living in palaces and eat and drink and go board their yachts and swim, what's their concern when there are millions of refugees who are living in camps or who have died as a result of the cold weather? What's their concern if one country, two countries, three countries are destroyed? That doesn't concern them. They have no problem with that. And here I ring the bell of alarm. There is something new which requires from the Lebanese and from the political factions and from the media outlets who play a very important role. Pay attention. No, there is something new. There is a new danger which requires us to be vigilant in dealing with the situation. We must show perseverance, steadfastness. We must not go along with the plans to explode the country and to wreak havoc in the country if somebody has such plans, and so we must all assume responsibility. Anyway, this is what I wanted to say. Our martyr, the commander Haj Hassan Laqis, just as in his life and his martyrdom, and also after his martyrdom, if he was unknown.
Live pictures here on Press TV from the Lebanese capital, Beirut. Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah speaking about the Hezbollah commander Hassan Laqis, who was assassinated by gunmen we know in front of his home on the 3rd of December. We know a memorial was also taking place in the southern suburb of the Lebanese capital for the Hezbollah commander. Sayed